Accession number 32369, Reel 3.
Mr. Cassidy, Reel 3. Can you describe the actual barracks and the area of the barracks?
Yeah, like I said, everything was so new.
Mr. Cassidy, Reel 3, can you describe the barracks, the rooms, accommodation and so on at Pontefract?
Yes, the barracks, like I said, were a real eye-opener to all of us because they were such big buildings and were all these different places that were pointed out to us, the parade square where you weren't allowed on unless you were with the NCOs, the naffy where you would get tea and sandwiches whenever you wanted, the cookhouse of course, which was always near at hand, the medical room in case you were hit, the guard room which was pointed out where we would spend time if certain things went wrong, and other things, you know, they had a few shops in, and the different officers' mess, the corporal's mess, the sergeant's mess, which were all off limits to us. So all this was getting sunk in, and of course, in the early days, we weren't allowed outside of the camp. The first few weeks, we were under orders that you're under strict training and you weren't allowed out of the camp at all. So apart from that, and which we were introduced to in the first year, the different things in the camp, which all looked extremely huge to us, and we all came back to our barrack room and said, "Well, we'll never be able to remember all that." And then, lo and behold, the next year we were hit with more things, such as clothing. And given our traditional denims and khakis and mess tins and button sticks and boots, gaiters and all these different things that were thrown at us, and we actually came back to the barrack room and just plumped everything on the bed and looked at it in dismay and not believing what we'd just been hit with. And
how was the uniform actually given to you?
Well, we were measured up and by a quartermaster, and he would shout to one of his storemen in the different places our size, and so we were mainly given two of everything, two denim trousers, two sets of gaiters, two sets of boots. So everything was just measured up. Hat size was just done by a tape measure around our head for a said roll size 6 7/8 Bury, and that was it. And the different badges, of course, were given to us. And
were the boots the old ammunition boots?
They were, yes, and brand new as well. So they were very hard, and we got back. And of course, there was always wherever we went, you always bumped into somebody who'd done it all before. And we had it in on our cards. We called them carders then, which was the name for the training platoon or whichever that you were in. And I think one of them had been back squatted for something he'd done. He'd missed training there, so he had an idea of what you do and how you do it. And of course, we weren't shown, in as much as we knew what the end product was, because we could see all these shining boots and the corporals coming round with the where you could see your face in the boots, and wondering how on earth do you get them, as shiny as that. So We had to find this out ourselves, and of course before that, before clothing was even mentioned, we were told how to make our bed and how our bed had to be looked at the next morning when you got up, and how you had to square the blankets off and make a pillow box and things like that, which of course, I mean, was brand new to us. I'd never made a bed before in my life. You know, I was being at home, I was just, it was always done for us. So when I saw all these blankets being folded and squared, this was all brand new to most of us, and it took us weeks before we could get it right. That was just the bed itself, so I think at the end of it all, we were a bit loath to get into the bed on the night time, but to make it, because we knew what we were in for the next morning if we didn't get our pillow square right or anything like that. But the clothing was a different thing altogether. I mean, it was all hit and missy. So when people were actually wearing them, some very few of it fitted properly. and the boots were a different thing altogether. I mean, I had blisters, I think, for the first week, and that was out without running or doing any marching in them or anything at all, just the simple act of wearing them for 8 or 12 hours during the day, giving me blisters with these boots and all, with the ammunition boots, of course, are very slippy, and everywhere you went, you had to watch how you walked, and if you did tend to walk too fast, your feet would go from underneath you, and you'd end up on your backside, and the main thing, of course, they made this noise of clattering when you were brought to attention and things like that, and when you were marching. So,
did they make allowances for your blisters when you had them?
Only as much as I wouldn't call them big blisters. Really, they were just where your feet were gradually getting used to wear these big boots, you know. But I think they were inconvenient more than hurting, and you got people saying, well, put your boots in the bath overnight, and that'll more or less make them a bit more flexible for you in the morning and all that. But like everything, I mean, you got to watch. I took everything but said, well, I kind of see how leaving your boots in the bath overnight is going to help, you know. So you either took it or you left it, really.
And how did you keep your brasses and your boots clean and from being it up to this standard that they had?
Like I said, we were given two of everything. So one set of boots, you would bull up and call them your best boots.
And how did you bull them up?
You had to buy a tin of polish and a couple of yellow dusters, and you had plenty of time on the night time after you'd finished training, because you weren't allowed out, and you would spend the night, as soon as you finished training, sitting on your bed with your boot in your hand, and the toe caps and heels, you would bull them up, i.e. you would put polish on, and with the help of your finger and a yellow duster and some water, you would a sequence of polish, duster, and making your finger do circles on your toe cap until it rubbed in all the polish. Then you would start again the routine, and then eventually you'd see a bit shine come to them. And then, like all things, some people are good at it and some people are not very good at all at it. And I came, I think, in between. And it wasn't for a lack of not trying to bull them up. It was just frustration more than anything else when I was looking over and seeing, boy, how's he getting them so clean as that, you know? And I'm still here with this. But eventually you got the hang of it, and it took a while. There was different ideas came up. Somebody came up and said, look, if you scrape them, you'll have to burn your boots and start again. And I said, burn your boots? What are you on about? And they said, well, you put candle grease on and set fire to it on your toes. That'll take all the old polish off, and then you start from scratch again, pulling them up. And I said, oh, is that what you got to do? And, of course, this was right, because if somebody stood on your toe cap or you kicked something, of course, I mean, it left a dint in where you'd put all the polish on. So you couldn't fill it in again, really. You had to start from scratch. So that's how you did it. You burnt the polish off and started again. But you always had the best pair of boots, which you kept for your new... when there was going to be an inspection, and that's when you would wear them. But your normal everyday boots as well had to be cleaned as well. So you tended not to really care much about them, but every spare minute you had, you would get your best boots out and start bulling them up.
What about the uniform and the brasses and the buttons and so forth?
The apart from well, the denims had no. It was just a fatigue dress for during the day. The brasses for cleaning was mainly the gaiters that you wore, your belt, and at that time your collar badges as well. They were had to be cleaned. The belt. No, this was a different. This was a new venture for all of us as well, because you were given blanco, and you had to take all the brasses off first of all, and then blanco, and that had to be cleaned up as well, the blanco, and then you would start with these brasses, which went on. And I always remember there was two, just like sliding brasses, and then there was the two catches that held the brasses to get your belt together. When you close it, they had to be really cleaned. And then you had two buckles at the back, which also had to be cleaned. But it was very awkward for those two, because they were attached to the belt. And if you were cleaning them with Mepo or Brasso or wherever it was, if you happened to touch your belt, then, of course, it was seen as your belt being dirty. And we all learned... you know, in time, that it may look good, and you spent a lot of time cleaning it, but when the corporals came round the next day and had a look at it, and if they said it was dirty, it was dirty, and you had to do it again. So everything was, you know, really had to be on the ball, and we were learned to clean it.
Did you have what, a barrack room iron to...
Yes, we did, yes, and that was another thing which was brand new to me anyway. I mean, I've ironed shirts before at home, but that's about it. Now it came to ironing things like BD, where you had to have the lines in them exact. And the old BDs had a big pocket down the side as well. And the tunic was... like a funny sort of top, because it was very awkward for ironing. It was something like a stiff shirt, the old BDs. So it took a while, because you had to iron the crease in your arms as well of this BD tunic, and I could never get this right until it was shown, you know, really how to do it properly, and then you got the hang of it. In time, where the stripes go, and how to keep the stripes in your BD trousers and whatever. So eventually, it really made you had to ask. If you didn't ask, then you were caught out, because when you didn't know how to do things properly, then you would never find out by yourself. So I got round to, you know, asking whenever I was in doubt or on anything. Even the corporals, when they came round and said, you know, this is new to you, this is what you've got to do, I would always ask why and how. you know. And they said, if some of them, of course, would say, you'll find out, you know, eventually how to do it and whatever. But I was always inquisitive and trying to find out first, because I knew one question could save a lot of hours of work and unnecessary work as well.
What equipment did they give you?
We had, apart from the clothing, we weren't introduced to other outdoor things until, you know, halfway through the training. It was surprising, because we were, after about 3 weeks, we were still learning how to march. And it's funny how, you know, when you see people on parades today, you know, and you say, well, they're out of step and they're not marching properly on that one. It really is, until you've done it and learned how to do it, how easy it is to forget how to do it as well. And, you know, from we were going round doing all the skills of training, of how to come to attention, how to salute, how to stand at ease, and it was all done by numbers. So everywhere you went, every day of the week, you would hear people going, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1. And this was a common barrack room activity throughout the day. And I'm certain I heard during the night people, whether they were having nightmares or what, I could still hear these numbers being shouted out at somewhere in the barracks, you know. And it was amazing when we were out on the squares learning how these different marching skills, and how to come to a halt, how to salute, how we had to shout these numbers out. And of course it was, although there was training carders in other parts of the barracks as well, they were probably at a more advanced stage than what we were, because they were able to do these sort of skills without shouting the numbers out. So we knew they were a bit longer in the training than what we are. So we always looked forward to the day when we could do these sort of skills without shouting the numbers out. And eventually it did come, and I think we were all pleased about it, because not only was it bad on your throat, but it was getting monotonous as well, everywhere you go and shouting out numbers.
Were you trained at the light infantry pace from the very beginning, or did you work up to it?
We worked up to the pace, and we didn't get introduced to the band until it was a few weeks or a couple of weeks before our passing out parade, after 16 weeks. But before then, of course, we'd been introduced to what we were there for in the army in the first place, which was to kill the enemy. And of course, we were given the SLR, 7.62 rifle. And
was it a good weapon?
It was really good. It was heavy. For to do the arm skills with it, i.e. the presenting of arms and the carrying of it. But eventually he got used to it. But it was after we'd fired it, and we knew how to you know, gauge the sights and use it for different things, and saw the damage it would do, and how to do load the magazines and everything like that, then we eventually, you know, it became part and parcel of us. And probably the biggest criminal offence you could do at that time was if you were out anywhere with your rifle and you left it somewhere. Because the corporals had a nasty backhanded way, if they saw one unattended, they would just sneak round and pick it up, and they left you not only red-faced, but you were struggling to find out where you'd left it and where it was at. And with all this promise of court-martial offences and everything like that, if you lost your rifle or anything like that, or if the enemy got hold of it, was all came out then, you know. And whenever it happened, you know, everybody was, you know, I've got mine, well, thank God for that, but we'll have to find Joe Bloggs' rifle, otherwise he's for the high jump. So we were taught, even if we went out and exercises, you lie with your weapon and you don't let it out of your sight for 1 minute.
Did you march with it at the trail, or is that the way that the light infantry march?
No, they just changed then, actually, to marching with it at the shoulder. And of course, at that time, the light infantry, I'm not sure today, everything was started off from the at ease position. So when it was quick march, you were standing at ease, you come to attention, and then you marched off. So you were only brought to attention as one single movement. If you'd been marching and you came to the halt, you would halt, and from the shoulder, you would bring your rifle down to the attention position, and then you would stand at ease. And of course, even for a simple right turn, it was brought to attention, right turn, and then stand at ease when you'd completed the manoeuvre. So it was quite good when it was done in sequence, but there was always with these ammunition boots, you could tell when somebody wasn't in time, because you would hear the clatter of the boots on the ground. And but marching came as second nature, and of course when we were introduced to the band for the first time, they more or less played the pace that we would be expecting to play or march to at the regimental pace, and that was something we always thought that although we could march in step, I used to think, I wonder what it looks like from the side, you know, even though the corporals were shouting and bawling, get in step and get in line, keep your distance and everything like that. We were doing as good as what we could, and I used to always say, I wonder what it's like for people looking from the outside on how we're doing it and what it looks like. It was always something of a myth for me, and even now when I see it, the light infantry pace on the television against the normal pace is always fast. At that time, it was second nature. It wasn't a really fast pace, really. It was just normal pace to us, because that's what we'd been taught to march to, and we weren't taught to march in any other fashion. With it being a light infantry cadre or training platoon, we all did the same pace.
And what pace is it?
It's 140 to the minute. And it, when you see that march today, that's a really fast pace to march to. And of course, you had to be fit. But at the time, we were all young lads, so I suppose we were fit.
At what stage of your training then were you actually introduced to the weapon and started weapon training?
Probably after about 5 weeks, properly. We were given the weapon, and of course before then we were told how to disassemble it and how to assemble it, and then how to fill the magazines, what the velocity was, what damage it would do, and then of course it came the old tricks of go back to your barracks and learn how to take out or dismantle your rifle, how to clean it, how to put it together again, and then how to do it quickly. And of course, when they said quickly, they meant how to do it blindfolded. So, I mean, the next day, I remember all these different parts, memorising what they felt like, and by feel and by touch we could more or less take the rifle to bits, clean it, put it together again blindfolded. And
was it easy?
It wasn't very easy. No, it wasn't very easy, and it was a matter of practice make perfect, and it took a lot of hours of jamming your fingers and losing your nails and things like that on how to do it properly, and to do it as second nature, and the importance of how to keep the rifle clean.
How did you do that? How did you clean the rifle?
Why, we were given light oil, 4x2, which was a bandage of cloth, and a pull-through. Pull-through was a lead piece on a piece of cord, which you dropped through the barrel, after, and you'd folded up the 4x2. That's why it was called 4x2. It was. That was the measurement of it. You folded that up into a bow, into a slot on the cord, and you pulled, you put the weight part of the cord through the barrel that came out the other end, and you pulled it through, and that cleaned the barrel. And then you were taught how to look through the barrel, right through the chamber, and to make sure that there was no dirt or anything else left inside it. It had to be silky clean, because if it wasn't, then, of course, you wouldn't be able to be any good as a marksman or anything like that, because the bullets wouldn't come out properly, or the rounds wouldn't be fired properly if it was a dirty chamber.
And you're regularly inspected?
Every day, just about. And things from on parade, on morning inspection, there was always two or three picked out. Strip your rifle down, and you would put it on your shoulder, and the officer or the sergeant who was there would just look up the barrel, and he would always come back and said, "I can see bloody cobwebs through there. When was it last cleaned?" And you know for a fact that he cleaned it the day before, or even that morning. And of course that was the end of it. Everybody was in trouble then, so we all had to have a clean exercise with the rifles again and make sure they were cleaned, and then another inspection would take place. And we would be told if it was all right, if it was passed. And that, of course, that was the same in the barracks as well. If the corporals came round in the morning and they didn't like the look of the place, they said, "Right, we'll have you. We'll inspect again at 6 o'clock at night, or 7 o'clock at night." So it meant that once you'd finished the day's training, you would spend an hour on cleaning the barracks up. That's polishing the floors, polishing the toilets, cleaning, making the bed again, everything chit-chatting on hangers, and they would do an inspection 6 or 7 o'clock at night until you got it right.